Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Llewellyn Cordier is a South African actor and director. He is known for his appearances in movies and television shows such as Day Zero, Savage Beauty, Smart Casuals, Prime, Kings of Joburg, The Watchmaker, The Executives, Family Secrets, Legacy, and many more. I interviewed Llewellyn on the red carpet at the National Film and Television Awards and then a day later at the Gladiator 2 premiere in 2024. I decided it would be interesting to hear about his journey. So up next on Celeb Savant, live in studio at Soligol Podcasts in Johannesburg, South Africa, is Llewellyn Cordier.
Llewellyn, thank you for joining us today.
You're very, very welcome.
Let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or as a teenager, did you think, cool, I want to be in the acting creative world, and how did that journey progress?
At birth. I came out asking for a script. You know what? I always wanted and lived in that kind of world. I think my parents were always really worried about me because I wasn't the typical kind of kid in the sense of I didn't do all the normal kind of things. Like at Christmas time, I'd want to put on a dance concert or a show. Although I was also very good at sports, so at least my dad was happy about that. I wanted to explore it a lot more. And I will say this part of it is that when I was supposed to choose a high school, I did go to my dad and say, I wanted to go to School of the Arts. that was not what he wanted for me, by no uncertain terms. He's very old school, so he thought that if I went to that school, it would change my sexual orientation. I was like, you don't know me, because nothing would change that. So I didn't end up going to that, but at school I always participated in the school plays, mm-hmm. much to my friends' teasing and ridiculing. I'd always go along the side. So I'd go to rugby practice and then straight, I got to leave early. They didn't know I was going to rehearsals for the play that I was in. And only on the night when the play came out did they know that I was in it. You know, one of the funniest stories is that my acting career didn't set foot or settle until I watched a movie, and you're going to laugh at it. Bloodsport.
Okay.
Jean-Claude Van Damme. That was like, this is what I want to do. This is what I want to do. So from that age, I wanted to do it.
So how did that knowledge of okay, I want to do this, how did that actually transpire to you actually doing it?
I was kept away from it for a very long time. I'm not going to lie. I was kept away from it. I was steered away. I was always told that, no, you know, you can't really do it. You won't really go anywhere. You won't really make it. You won't. In my first marriage, I was watching a onstage production of Rocky Horror. I said, I want to do this. And she looked at me and she said, no. Like, you're just too old. You don't, like, you just, and I wasn't that old then. I wasn't even that old. Subsequently, we got divorced. A lot had to do with my choices in life, and it just wasn't on par. So we kind of grew apart. And funny enough, soon after my divorce, I got the role of Rocky in the Rocky Horror. Matthew Stewartson, bless his soul, he was still around. He was directing, co-directing with Bronwyn Evans. Mm-hmm. And I walked in, I wanted to audition for Brad. Like, I was in the gym world roundabout then, so I did have what you call biceps. And they said that I came to audition. I want to audition for Brad. It's like, no, you're Rocky. So I auditioned, and basically in that audition, I booked the role. Where they were still doing casting throughout the country, And only in December were we going to rehearse. This was like in March. It's like, no, okay, we'll call you in December, but you've got this role. And I think that kind of solidified it for me, you know, because people always told me that I wouldn't be able to. And for me, the divorce is really hard. It was a second wind. Also was a second wind and a realization of where I should be, where I get my happiness and my joy. Just fast forward past that, I then got out of it because money was difficult to make in that industry, and I wanted to put all of my energy in that, and I couldn't. So I went back into my training, back into the personal training, and then I met, very luckily, I met my new wife, 8 years married, and she forced me to go back into it. She said, if you're passionate about it, go and do it. It's going to be hard. You've been away from the industry for such a long time. People have forgotten who you are. You're going to have to slug away. But do it. Don't stay away from the game. Be in it. Be there. Work your way. And if you work and slug and push and grind and it works out that you don't end up where you want to be, then so be it. You gave it a shot. And now I'm talking to you.
Obviously, you can't be in the space of the other person.
No.
Why do you feel, and this is a question to you, might be a rhetorical one. Why do you feel there's that projection of other people onto people who want to be in the arts, whether it's acting, performing, singing, to say, no, they can't do it, they won't be successful? Why do they project that? Why do you feel, from your experience, and maybe it will help others?
I feel like they're trying to help you. I feel like they think by doing that, they're protecting you. But here's the thing, though. Why protect someone from the path that they want to travel? Like, if it's my path, then I want to travel it, and it's going to be hard, it's going to be difficult, and I'm going to be crying, I'm going to be starving in some months, I'm going to be, you know, battling to get rent. That's my path.
That's your
for
choice.
Me to experience.
Yep.
I feel like it's good intentions when they steer you away from it. Go be an accountant, Dwellen. It's like, have you seen me count? It's not a good idea.
Well, you do count with your training, but that's...
Yeah, but no, I'm a trainer. I count to three, and then the rest is up to the client.
But then they don't realize that we stopped counting.
No, we stopped. It's like, oh, it's another two.
Another 10. The thing is that also what I've realized is people love unconsciously or consciously. It's a combination of both. They love comfort zones. For example, I told you I teach spinning classes.
Correct.
I've been teaching spinning classes for years. And now it's not pre-booked bikes. It's first come, first serve. The regulars will go to their bike every single week. And if someone is sitting in their bike,
they'll throw a fit. Oh, they'll throw a fit.
And it's all based on fear because they're being pushed out of their comfort zone. Mm. So what I'm also hearing, it may be from those people who are trying to protect you, inverted commas, is that they think, okay, this equals comfort, security equals comfort, whereas the path that you want to choose is not necessarily comfort because there's nothing set in stone of how much or how, when, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that they're projecting their fear of them being pushed out of their comfort zone onto you, because knowing this is your 9 to 5 every day, I know this. You know this. It's easy. We can just get into this rhythm. Whereas in the arts, it's like, oh, will it be? Won't it be? And then it causes chaos a little bit in your world, which you, in the artist's world, they might love and enjoy. But in the partner or in the people in the periphery, they're observing this. Like, oh, I can't deal with this chaos. It's too much fear for me, the unknown. So I need to project that onto you.
I think you're 100% right. I really do think, I've never thought of it that way. But I do think you're 100% right, because it makes them uncomfortable being in the unknown. They feel like, okay, so if that's uncomfortable for me, then it will be uncomfortable for you. Yeah, 100%. But I wouldn't say being in the chaos is something that I love, but it is something I strive in. And I think any artist would say that, and I speak on my behalf only, because maybe some artists will say no, they don't like that, but I'm just thinking that chaos drives you.
Let's change the word, let's reframe it. Instead of chaos, let's call it
uncertainty
or challenge.
Challenges, yeah. You that live in a constant state of challenge.
Exactly.
I like that.
Yeah, because chaos is negative.
That's why you do this.
Chaos has negative connotations. Let's reframe it to positive.
It depends. I mean, I don't know. Chaos in my life, it's quite a cool thing.
You see, that's another interesting thing I've learned is I'm not sure if you're aware of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. So that's the way people process information. Mm. And what 99% of the world do not realize is that every other person that hears, sees, interprets and processes information differently.
Correct.
And yet they're assuming that everyone around them is seeing, hearing, and experiencing information the same.
And they don't.
So part of this, and this is where I'd say that 70 to 80% of breakdowns of communication happens, is that there are dictionaries of definitions. Your definition of chaos is different to mine. But no one is taking the step down and saying, okay, that's your definition. What's mine? And let's open that book and discuss it. And instead, they project their definitions onto each other, not understanding that they're different. And that's where breakdown of communication happens.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that 100% explains the five languages of love. So even in relationships, the same thing.
Yeah.
What I perceive your language to be saying to me is different from how you're saying it to me.
Yes.
Until you break down and understand you got that decipher
yes.
in the middle. what do you call it? The interpreter. So the interpreter of language, once you have that in between, then you are having a proper conversation.
Also, but as part of NLP, they're the three forms of processing. So something kicks into each of us as a young age, which allows us to create a dominance, secondary and tertiary. So dominance means you'll be in it 8, 9, 10 hours of the day. Secondary means you maybe be it an hour, 2 hours, tertiary, half an hour, if at all. There are three types. There are visual people, they're auditory people, and they're kinesthetic people. Visual people create pictures on the information they're hearing. So in their mind, as I am talking right now, a visual person will be seeing that picture in their mind. Oftentimes, visual people think if you're not looking at them means you're not listening to them.
Yeah.
Auditory people, they hear the word, they understand the word, they put the word into the sentence, they understand the sentence, they put the word into the sentence in the paragraph, that's how they understand. Auditory people often turn their ears because the receiving mechanism is through their ears. So that's how they turn and receive the information. So when they see a visual person sees an auditory person doing this, they're like, why aren't you not listening to me? But they
look at me.
Exactly. Now, the third one is called kinesthetic. I'll do that word again. Kinesthetic.
It has to do with movement.
Energy, tone of voice, emotion, okay. Body language. Correct. So in the relationships, a visual person likes to send notes, give presents, have tangible things that they can see. Whereas an auditory person is about the words, I love you. Whereas with the kinesthetic person is about the affection, hugging, yes, holding hands.
Yes.
So if a visual person keeps giving an auditory person presents and the visual person never says, I love you, the auditory person could misconstrue it and think, well, why doesn't this person love me? Because I'm not hearing the words.
Yeah. Unless you understand exactly where
it's exactly. coming from. So I wish I'd teach this stuff at school. Can you imagine how amazing or different the world would be
if they taught this stuff? Actually, you know what? It makes sense instead of some of the stuff that they are teaching at school, which you won't get into. But that exactly. would be a breakthrough if you could, because communication then would hit new levels, levels where we actually would be communicating with each other instead of speaking at one another.
Exactly. Okay, let's dive back into the acting.
Okay, let's dive back.
What do you enjoy about acting?
It's a very good question because I've thought about it many times and I can't put it down to one thing, but it is the fact that I can dive into a different persona, a different person, a different personality, a different situation. And I can experience that 110% in every given and different project that I am in. There is something that happens. It started happening when I started being a little bit more real with my performances. Because, you know, you do grow. And I have watched some of my old stuff and I go,
yes.
So we don't watch that one again. Okay? but as it's gone on, and as I've learned, like I learned from some of the most amazing actors in this country, like, and one I'm going to mention is Zolisa Oluva. Like I've learned from this guy. Season 1 of Kings of Joburg, my character was very low down in the order on the cast sheet. So I was on set every day, but I wasn't filming a lot. So I got a lot of learning on set, and I'd watch how people performed and how they got into characters. And I took it and I went home and I learned it, so that next time I would do something, I would feel something instead of want to see something. It doesn't make sense, but when I explain it now, so in a scene, there'll be all these cameras and there'll be all the people. But when I get into it, it is just me and this other person, and I can feel a vibration. There is a vibration. There's a vibrating energy that you do not feel anything or see anything other than this person who is the character you're communicating with.
Yeah.
And when you walk away from it, it is the highest of high that I've ever experienced. No drug, no alcohol, nothing can come close to that. And it is an absolute gift every time I get to be on set, be in a scene, be with the other actor in a scene. It's a gift. Baron, I literally cannot explain it. I'll walk away and people will go like, William, you're smiling so hard. It's like, you have no idea how good this feels.
Yeah.
I mean, I've asked so many times, like, why are you always smiling on set? Well, yeah, 4 a.m. It's like, I get to do this.
Yeah.
I get to do this. This is here, right here and right now. It may not be here tomorrow. That's why I'm smiling. Yeah, we may be in the horrible conditions. Maybe raining, maybe freezing, maybe boiling hot. We may be stuck in a tent and it's 50 degrees, but we're getting to do this. And also, I'm getting to do something that I was told I would never be able to do.
I love that. So when I started Celebsolent, I had numerous people say to me, okay, I need to watch others, see how they're doing it, other successful people, and emulate them. I'm the type of person that if I did that, I would try and copy ABC, and I would try and take on what they were doing, and it would no longer be Barrett. It would be Barrett imitating that person.
100%.
So when you were learning from these people, did you go away and think, okay, I'm the type of person that will take this, this, and this, and this, and allow it to become Llewellyn's? How did you separate it becoming you imitating compared to it you creating?
That is actually also a very good question, because I go back and I say, okay, they did this in that situation. Now, knowing my character, because that's the other thing that I've done, is like when I get a character, I go through the whole process of knowing my character. When was he born? What are his traits? Does he have any idiosyncrasies? Is he OCD? Is he, you know, he's an Aries? Is he a Libra? You know, is he a Sagittarius? Is he a Scorpio? Hey, I'm going to play one or two of those. And then I would take it and see how it fits and sits with me, not trying to be them, because I don't want to be anybody else. I see how it affected them, how they portrayed it, how they felt with it, and what decisions they made in that moment. So then I would take it, put myself in the same situation, and feel how I would do it differently. Very good case in point. I do a lot of my self-tapes with a very good actor. His name's Clayton Boyd. Clayton's done a lot of international stuff. Now, we'll do self-tapes with each other. The first time I ever did it, I was very self-conscious, because I consider him a mentor. And when I get in front of the camera, I feel like he's judging me. But it soon wasn't that way, because we would audition for the same character. And not one of our auditions were ever the same. I'd walk away and say, I loved what you did with the character. And he would say, yeah, I love that, but I didn't get that when you brought that out in the character.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a good sign for me to take back, that I am embodying how I feel and how I interpret. So a lot of the things, when I see it, like I'll go and watch characters that aren't on camera. I would, like, a lot of my research is watching movies, but I'll watch a character that isn't the lead, that is a side character, and I'll watch. I'm like, this guy is just embracing his character, his person, and he is the same in every single scene. Mm. And you want to be that. You want to make sure that your character is yours, true to however you've embodied him, how whatever movements you've created for him, and keep that going throughout. What I learned is, like, this golden thread. Keep it along this golden thread all the way to the end. Keep on that golden thread. Mm-hmm. Don't veer off it. Stay on that path.
Or you can just sit and watch humans at the coffee shop.
I do that though. No, my favorite is Sandton City. Sandton City in the square with popcorn, you know, where the Mandela statue is. Mm. And I have done this on so many occasions, and I've sat there and I've had a popcorn, and I've sat for about 2-3 hours. A friend of mine came and was like, "What are you doing?" It's like, "Get a box of popcorn.
Watch. Come
watch.
Come watch. Anywhere you can go.
There is drama everywhere."
As kids, we were always taught cover up. It's dirty. Taught to not love ourselves based on societal things. That can't run around naked because how can you? It's like you can't be seen in that way. So as adults, most people, when they look at themselves in the mirror, it's like they always look for the things that they don't like, the criticisms of who they are, because we were taught that from a young age. When watching yourself in the beginning, yes, it was like, but now as you've grown, how do you separate yourself when watching yourself from the observer of actually understanding the creative process compared to Llewellyn being self-critical of Llewellyn?
So it's very simple. I watch with two choices. Am I believable? Am I not believable? That's it. I don't look at what I look like. I don't hear the words that are coming out of my mouth. Are they well pronounced? Was my hair looking good? In that character, do I believe him or not? A lot of the time I watch now, I don't, and it's going to sound funny, probably sound pretentious, but I don't mean it to sound that way, but I don't see myself.
Okay.
I don't see myself. I see the character that I was portrayed. And one or two times when I do see myself, it's like, you need to do that again.
But you see,
that's when I can pick up I'm not believable.
I disagree with you, because when you see yourself as not yourself, that's when you're being an observer. You're taking yourself out of the situation, mm-hmm. and you're seeing it for its true form. When you start picking up those other things, that's when that parrot, I call it the parrot negative brain, is kicking in of self-deprecating, of self-criticism, of self-judgment that no one else in the world would see. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do understand what you're saying, but my argument is this. When that happens, that means my performance has dropped for whatever reason. And I can hear it.
Okay.
And my wife is my best critique. I said, "Oh, I didn't like, that didn't sound right." She goes, "Yeah, you're you." that was Llewellyn. That wasn't
the character.
Leon. That wasn't all. And it doesn't happen that often. I'm happy to report. So now it is. Do I believe you? Do I not believe you? And a lot of the time, I'm gonna say this: when the scene is done, when the episode's done, I will literally nice job,
pat yourself on the back, which nice is job. Very important.
Nice job. I'm happy. I like nice job. Do I deserve to win an Oscar? I don't really care. Nice job.
The thing is that if you don't recognize yourself,
yeah,
how will anyone ever recognize you?
And the thing is, I do, because not a lot of people will give you credit. So I've been around for a very long time, and I mean, I'm not talking about in the industry, I'm talking about on the world. You know, and being in the limelight for quite a considerable amount of time, I receive a lot of hate mail. A lot. A lot, like on a daily basis. I'm like, "Oh, that's fun. Oh, that's a new one. Okay, that's good." So I'm used to receiving all of that stuff. I don't need that. That's why I will find any time that I can to self-affirm myself.
Yep, you need to.
And I do. It's not arrogant.
No, it's not.
And it's not being egotistical.
No, it's not.
It's being true to yourself. You do a good job, pat yourself on the back. No matter what field you're in, you do a good job. Give yourself the credit you deserve. High five yourself. Pat yourself on the back.
Exactly.
High five. Get on with the job.
No, but absolutely. Because the thing is that it's that same concept. What does RuPaul say? That if you can't love yourself, how can anyone love you?
Well, true.
So it's the same concept. If you don't recognize yourself, how do you expect anyone ever to recognize you? And I'd forgotten it and I'd been reminded. So now every Monday in my diary, there's a note, weekly recognition. I stand up. I say, "Good job for the last week. Well done."
It's important.
Exactly.
It's so important. Because people forget that, and they forget. I mean, it comes from a game that I played a very long time ago. It was a workshop that I did. And the one game that we played was called the Lifeboat Game. And we're in a room. Okay, that's quite a hectic workshop that we did. It was over 3 days. You're kind of locked away. And the thing is, there were 5 people that get in the lifeboat. And of a group of about between 60 and 70 people.
Mm.
And those five people are in this group, and people selected them to be in it. And you sit back, it's like, why wasn't I? The instructor, the guy that said, he said, when you were choosing for people to go in the lifeboat, why didn't you choose yourself?
Ah.
Why didn't you? Do you not deserve to live? We don't often choose ourselves. Yep. Why? It's the most natural thing to do. Yeah, I choose me. I choose life.
Exactly.
Why not? Okay, I know I'm going to get a lot of like, yeah, you're
but. No, but there's
the
no
young
buts.
And the ladies must go. I'm like, why not choose yourself? If exactly. You're going to bet on anybody, bet on yourself.
Exactly.
So that was an important lesson. I learned it way back when, and it's been something that I've carried through with me in my life. Okay. A lot of people look at me and without speaking to me say, Llewellyn's arrogant. And they will say that, and I understand that until they get 2 minutes of conversation with me, okay? And I'll say to them, you thought I was arrogant. It's like, yes, I did. It's based on what I look like. Based on what? Because you hadn't spoken or spent 2 minutes to get to know what I'm about. It's like you took a look at me, looked at how I presented myself, how I held myself. It's like, he's arrogant.
I've learned this because I've done my Master Reiki course. And in Reiki, we learned that the mirror effect. If someone is allowing you to feel something like, oh, that person's arrogant, it's because they're mirroring something within you that you have not yet acknowledged about yourself. Mm. So all those people that perceive you as arrogant is because they lacking that in themselves, or they are arrogant in different situations or circumstances.
Great. I agree. By the way, is there anything you haven't done? I'm just a Reiki master, a psych major, it's a spinning instructor, you do your own podcast, you're in an interview on the red carpet. So I'm like, come on.
Okay, what's coming up next over the next period of time?
There is a production, a project called Hunting Jessica Brock. Now, that is a big, big movie. It's of international standard. It is shot as an international movie. And it is going to be, as far as I know, I can be singing the wrong kind of words, but it is going to go to a cinema release. It is a great production. The company that I worked with, the director in particular, Alistair Orr, and one of the producers, Ari, man, some of the most incredible people. And when it comes to the unit and crew and production, incredible, world-class crew and production, and the actors were just phenomenal, like world class, start to finish. We shot in really difficult conditions. We were shooting out of Beersport. We were shooting in the rain, in the freezing cold, like temperatures -2, and we were in it. And everybody were just pulled in. Like, you know, there was nights where it was raining and we'd stop for 5 minutes. Everybody, like, cast and crew, get everybody, like, wipe the cameras down, get everybody out, get into position, and shoot a scene before the rain starts coming down again. So it was one of those things where, like, it really was a team effort. It was beautiful to watch and beautiful to be a part of. That one, I cannot wait for it to come out. I have no idea
when
it's supposed to.
Okay.
We've done all the final cuts, the final edits. We've done ADR on it. We really have gone to town. So waiting for that. There is also, this one's going to be a really beautiful one because we're all waiting for it. The cast is The Kings of Joburg Season 3. Now, I know it's coming out within the next couple of months. Cannot give you an actual date, but this one is the season of all the seasons. Just from, again, the crew, the cast, the production, the production value. We shot half of it in Joburg. We shot half of it in Cape Town. So we had that energy to work with. Personally, it's one of the most beautiful things to do as an actor in this country, because when you're in Joburg and you're shooting in Joburg, you'll go to work, you go to set, and then if you've got a day off, you go to your normal job. Or if you finish early enough, you'll finish and then I'll go and do clients later on in the night. When you shot in Cape Town, it was just you and your character and your story. There wasn't any side thing. So on days off, I would take a run down to the beach, train, and then come back and go through my script and go through a lot of the story. Also, because all the way the cast would, after filming, that could all meet in someone's room, sit out on the balcony, and we'd go through the day's filming and speak about how the scene went and where it's going to and how we were going to go into the next scene. So I feel like from that point of view, just the camaraderie and the connectivity of the cast was just on another level. Cannot wait for that. A couple of others that are coming out. I shot an indie movie, which I'm really waiting for because it was a great team. A very interesting story. It's called, What the Strangers In. And there's a couple of other things coming out this year. I've just finished shooting on an international film called Sniper. So that's one of the Sniper franchise. So that was really, really cool as well. I've been blessed. I've really, really been blessed.
And how many people said that you couldn't do it and wouldn't be able to do it?
You know what? I must say it probably is one of my driving forces. But more than that, I just love what I do. Mm. I mean, now even when I'm not working, if I'm not on a set or on a project, like I do feel like, I need to be on something. But then I get these opportunities to work with AFTER, to work with students, to get onto a thing that isn't being paid, that you aren't making money, but you're getting to exercise your muscle. You're getting to be out there. You're getting to learn different parts of your craft. And also going to auditions. Other actors, I don't know who sees it like this, but going to an audition is a job. It is a job. The audition is the job. You have an audience. You have a room. You know, even if it's a self-tape, you are doing it to an audience. And you get into a room and you got your director sitting with you. And it's an audience. It's an opportunity to be and do what you do.
So, Llewellyn, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final measure, as a final message, what would you like to say?
So my final message is this. Anybody that wants to get in this game, or even if you're not in this game and you're just, you know, wanting to know where to go with you and yourself and your life, just remember that no one has the power to tell you to do what you can or cannot do. If you've done the work, you've paid your dues, you are the only one standing in your way. Believe in yourself, back yourself, and go for what you want. The only thing that is stopping you is you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.